Equities are trading with solid gains this morning. Those gains seem to be built on the positive momentum that is building toward an effective treatment for COVID-19 infections. That is great news, and it may be really, really good news for essential industries like farming and meat processing.
Live from various secluded locales via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll talk with Molly Peltzer, the CEO of Midwest Dairy. Then it's on to our Farmer Forum with panelists Michelle Jones and Tim Recker. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp checks in. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis Michelson, thank you so much. Appreciate that, buddy.
Good morning, homie. How are we?
I'm doing okay. Well, it's a little cloudy. Okay. It's a little windy. It's a little gloomy out there this morning. But
it is.
The one where the rains fell, they got soakers. You know, like two-inch rains and just kind of ugly stuff happening in some of those areas. But a lot of the areas that were supposed to get upwards of, you know, an inch and a half, got a quarter, you know, a third of an inch, something like that. So the way that the wind is blowing today, if we had sun shining on it, dude, we might be back out by this afternoon around here. It's pretty crazy.
I really honestly have no idea how much we got here in my backyard. It doesn't seem like a whole lot. I think I would know if we got 2 inches. I would know.
Dude, you got to come out of the basement sometimes.
That's a thing?
It's allowed. It is very much allowed. Okay.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm going to start crafting myself a rope ladder is what I'm going to do. And I've got a reciprocating saw. I'm going to cut a hole in the floor. Yeah. I should be up by showtime this afternoon. How's that?
Okay, great. That's outstanding. Oh, man. Yeah, we've got a couple on the show that have been up and out of the basement today. There's no doubt about that. Tim Recker, Michelle Jones, looking forward to the conversation that we are having, that we'll be having in the second half of the show. And we've got some really good news coming from Midwest Dairy, some interesting stuff.
Oh, great.
Dare I say, feel good stuff coming from Midwest Dairy.
I love to hear the words good news and dairy in the same sentence. That's exciting. I can't wait.
Very good. Let's get to the news.
Chip, just out this morning, the U.S. economy contracted 4.8% in the first quarter of 2020. According to the Commerce Department, consumer spending fell sharply as the economy notched its worst performance since the Great Recession. Personal expenditures fell 7.8%. A statement from the Bureau of Economic Analysis placed the blame on stay-at-home orders, saying, quote, this led to rapid changes in demand as businesses and schools switched to remote work or canceled operations and consumers canceled, restricted, or redirected their spending. Chip, agencies warn the second quarter will likely show a deeper contraction as stay-at-home orders were issued late in the first quarter. And I think we're really going to see the effects of it in the second quarter. Chip?
Yeah, the first quarter stuff's only got a couple of weeks of it, Davis.
Right. Exactly. Second
quarter indicators are going to be really tough. No doubt.
Well, President Trump yesterday, as we've discussed, declared meat processing plants as critical infrastructure, signing a measure to keep those plants up and running amid a spate of infections among the labor force. The president and his administration would, quote, take all appropriate action, to ensure that meat and poultry processors continue operations consistent with federal health and workplace safety guidance. In a related controversial development, Chip, get this, the Labor Department and OSHA have issued guidance that will provide additional liability protections for companies seeking to stay open during the outbreak. Liability protections there, buddy.
Yeah. And I think that's the reason for the executive order. We're going to talk about that more with Tim Recker and with Michelle Jones coming up at the bottom of the hour. But
good.
They're looking to give the meat packers some protection against being sued if a worker walks in there, it walks into one of the facilities and walks out sick. Seems to me like that's the bottom line.
Well, Chip, while the Senate still plans on returning to work on Capitol Hill on May 4th, the House has said it will not, citing advice from the Capitol physician amid an increase in D.C. infections of COVID-19. House leadership gave no timeline for their return to work. Now, Chip, the number of infections in the U.S. has surpassed 1 million with 58,355 deaths. Chip, that's a death toll higher than citizens lost to the Vietnam War now.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that comparison made a couple of times now, and yep. it is... You know, it's one of those cringe factors that we hear now. When you hear that, it's just it tightens you up. It's difficult to hear that, no doubt. But I don't know how I feel about the House deciding not to come back.
Because
we need them to be examples on how we are going to get this country up and running again. And if they just don't, then I don't know how we get the country up and running, because there's no way. There's no way. Workers, they're going to say, are you kidding me? The House of Representatives won't even go back to work. I'm not going back to work.
Right. Well, it could be just the Speaker Pelosi has so much ice cream to get through. We'll know when she's out when they return to work. Possibly. It's a thought. Tensions between Australia and China are heating up as Aussie Prime Minister Scott Morrison reiterated his demand for an independent inquiry into the pandemic. China shot back that Australia was trying to make political maneuvers, warning such an inquiry would lead to a boycott of Australian education, tourism, and ag products. And finally, Chip, from the file, the South Korean unification minister suggested North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's absence from the public eye may simply be the result of Kim laying low amid coronavirus. A U.S. official said the statement from South Korea is in line with U.S. assessments. Now, in a related note, North Korea has announced it will extend its coronavirus-related state of emergency until the end of the year. This, despite the fact the country has reported no cases of COVID-19. Square that one away in your head.
Yeah, I don't know if
that's
I can
a weird one.
Not. Yeah, absolutely. All right, thank you, Davis. Appreciate it.
You
Let's
bet.
Bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of Ag Professional. How you doing, Margie?
I'm doing okay this morning, Chip.
Good. Talk to me about Landis Co-op. What's going on there?
Yeah, I had a chance to catch up with their CEO, Matt Carstens, and Landis has a footprint across Central and most of Iowa. And he says, you know, luckily they've been fortunate. The agronomy side of their business is going smoothly so far this year, thanks to Mother Nature and a strong supply chain. However, during COVID-19, they're focused on three things. Number one, the physical health and safety of their farmer members and employees, and their physical distancing policies are going to be in place at least through May 15th. Number two, they are focused in any way they can specifically help their livestock producers, and their feed team is reaching out to every one of their farmer owners every day, if not every other day.
Wow.
And then number three, the mental health of their farmer members and employees, and they are recommending a statewide Iowa hotline, as well as any other resources that they can help provide to farmers to help them ride this wave that we're all in.
Yeah, that's impressive that they are making the effort to be in contact that often and that deliberately, Margie.
And they're saying they're putting a lot of intention and a lot of detail behind how they can tailor rations, helping farmers understand the economics of the markets. You know, specifically for hogs, they know that out through the fall, they're looking at losses of $20 to $50 a head. So what can they do now to help farmers succeed later?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, good stuff. Thank you so much, Margie. We'll talk to you again next week. Yep. That is Margie Eckelkamp, editor of Ag Professional. Okay, when we come back, we're going to have a conversation with Molly Pelzer, CEO of Midwest Dairy, right here on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards. Sign in and start earning at mybearplus.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Just a reminder, we got a farmer forum coming up at the bottom of the hour, so stay tuned for that. But right now, I want to have a conversation with Molly Pelzer. She is the CEO of Midwest Dairy, joins us right now. Molly, thank you so much for making time for us.
Good morning, Chip. It's a pleasure.
Good. Okay. Yeah, Molly, we don't have to go back over the, nearly 50 years that Midwest Dairy has been around, but tell us about what Midwest Dairy is and what states are represented.
Midwest Dairy is the nutrition and research promotion arm of the Dairy Checkoff. Mm-hmm. We serve 10 states in the Midwest, and our focus is on building trust and sales for dairy. Our mission is to bring dairy to life and to give consumers an excellent dairy experience. The 10 states are Minnesota to Arkansas, North Dakota down to Oklahoma, and the state of Illinois.
Gotcha. And it's the promotion and the nutritional promotion side of the checkoff, but specifically, how do you work with producers in those 10 states?
I like to think of us as representing the dairy farmers once their milk leaves the farm. We have the opportunity to work with and through partners to provide consumers dairy, both as a sales opportunity and also as a trust opportunity, so that they can choose the good nutrition and the deliciousness of dairy with confidence.
I like that trust side of things, Molly. That's become such an important piece of the puzzle in satisfying consumers' wants, maybe not the needs, but certainly satisfying their wants, isn't it?
Consumers of all ages, from youth to those young at heart, are very interested in learning where their food comes from. And dairy has a great story to tell, and we're very, very happy to share how we produce a safe and nutritious dairy.
Excellent. Okay, Molly, so Midwest Dairy is making one heck of a donation to the food banks in the 10-state area. Tell us about what you're doing, how you are doing it, and why.
Well, the national and regional checkoff organizations have reset their priorities since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. We're focusing our work on moving dairy foods to the market to help serve those in greatest needs. And one of our focus areas includes collaborating within the dairy community to help food banks throughout the Midwest meet the increased need for food, including dairy. Midwest Dairy received a special waiver from the U.S. Department of Agriculture for this one-time charitable initiative, given that food donations do not fall under our usual checkoff focus. So to help meet this growing need, Midwest Dairy, on behalf of the 6,500 dairy farm families we serve, is donating $500,000 to food banks in our 10 state regions for the purpose of purchasing dairy foods, including milk, cheese, butter, and yogurt. And we're working with our food bank community to help them identify the processors and the cooperatives that have a supply available.
Okay. The funding, one of the things that we talk about so often on this show, Molly, is when we talk about food processors or even individual consumers, we talk about the infrastructure to be able to handle half a beef if you decide that you want to start buying freezer beef. Do most of the food banks have the infrastructure, the refrigerators that they need to handle dairy products?
We did it. Survey just last week, once we got the USDA waiver to move forward, and talked with food banks about their refrigeration, and more importantly, their food pantries or their food shelves, where they send the food into the local communities. We did discuss refrigeration and the opportunity to make purchases from now until the end of June, so that we can provide the dairy that families are looking for, but in a very sequenced fashion so that the refrigeration and the transportation are not overwhelmed. So we're very confident that our food bank partners can work within our dairy community to secure the foods that they need and provide them in a safe way with the refrigeration that's needed.
Okay, Molly, after talking with your food bank partners, did you pick up any sense of just how much demand they are seeing, how it has changed under the pandemic?
We do know that unemployment numbers across the country are rising, and it's also with schools closed, where
right.
many families had children that were relying on especially breakfast and lunch as daily meals. So we do know that the demand has skyrocketed. But most important, before that time, we knew that milk, cheese, yogurt, butter were in high demand already in our food banks. One of our food bank's partners have coined the phrase that milk is liquid gold in the food bank system. So we know that the need existed before the pandemic, but has certainly increased during the pandemic.
Very cool. Okay. And it's neat that Midwest Dairy is there to do this. Are you using some of the processors that we're sending product into the food service? Because it seems like even though we're talking about food bank donations to food banks that are serving individual consumers, a lot of the processors that are sending product to the retail level, the grocery level, might have the products that you're looking to send to those food banks, but it'd sure be nice if we could use some of the processors that were serving the food service industry. Is there any way to make that happen?
That's spot on, Chip. So
okay,
last week
good.
I mentioned that we did the survey of food banks. We yep. also did a survey of the food, the dairy processors and the cooperatives in our region, and we helped them identify what they have available for food banks. And to your point, a lot of it came from the food service channel, whether that was for schools or if it was for restaurants. But we identified a large group of dairy processors and co-ops that were willing to share what they had available for the food banks to purchase. And I think it's really important for your listeners
yeah.
to know that these food purchases are above and beyond what they were currently purchasing. We wanted there to be incremental dairy sales from this effort, and our food bank partners understood that.
So this effort is literally, and I'm not saying that it's solving the problem, obviously. We've got big challenges out there. But you're literally helping to keep milk from being dumped with this effort.
This is work that's good for the dairy community and good for our communities as a whole. You know, the dairy farmer values to do the right thing and to make a difference and serve our communities is a wonderful tribute to those hardworking dairy farm families in our region. And they wanted to make a difference for their communities, and we're thrilled that we had this opportunity with the USDA waiver to give this a shot.
Hey, I was going to go back to that. This is a rare waiver on how checkoff funds can be used, right?
It is. And, you know, these are difficult circumstances, and USDA is acting accordingly in this particular instance, but in a lot of different ways, as you think about the restrictions for school meals that come to mind and how we can assist those families who are food insecure. So being nimble in these extraordinary times is important for all of us, and raising your hand and your willingness to help serve others. And that's what our dairy farm families have done.
Nice. I want to talk a little bit more about that, but I don't want to forget to do this, Molly. If somebody out there wants to raise their hand and help and with this effort in any way, where do they go for more information?
I think the best thing they could do is go to our website. We have a Contact Us section. We'd be more than happy to have matching contributions that we can add to this effort. And
nice.
If email is a better way for them to go, our general email address is MidwestDairy@MidwestDairy.com. Pretty easy to remember.
Yep.
We are working diligently every day to find matching funds for this effort. We want to salute our dairy farmers who provided this checkoff funding to get the ball rolling, but we'd certainly welcome contributions from others.
Yeah, I'm sure that there is no shortage of product or processing capacity because of the issues that we're dealing with food service and restaurants shut down and so on. So you can do this, but you can do it bigger than what is being done. I'm not overstepping it there, am I?
You are absolutely not. You know,
okay.
Dairy has lots of wonderful, versatile attributes. It's certainly easy to slice, pour, spoon, which makes it a great food for our busy American families as they struggle with the different challenges that the pandemic has brought. But there are two real attributes, I think, that speak highly of this donation. That's the enjoyment of dairy, whether that's pull of cheese on a pizza or the comforting glass of milk with cookies. These are comfort foods that Americans love. And then there's the nutrition side. We know that nutrition is very important for good health overall. And dairy has a unique group of nutrients that help keep us healthy, and particularly for children. We've always heard that dairy is important for strong bones and teeth, and we need to keep that in mind as we make food selections.
Molly, thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much for making time for us this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chip.
All right. And hey, maybe this can get some of the processors and dairies to the recovery phase of the COVID pandemic. We'll be back with the Farmer Forum next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, wheat is trying to be a leader this morning. Unfortunately, it's trying to lead us in the wrong direction. What's going on?
Yeah, that's right, Chip. I think what we're seeing is the SRW contracts are double digits lower in most of those contracts, and that's pulling the HRW and spring wheat markets lower. You know, funds are dumping long positions. We've got chances for some rains through the Eastern European area and Black Sea region. And I think, you know, if you're looking for a fundamental reason, that would be it. The pressure on wheat is also impacting the corn market. We had corn up more than a nickel in the front month contracts, and now we're under a little bit of price pressure there. So, that comes in the face of some positive ethanol news this morning. While production continued to decline, ethanol stocks also declined, and the implied ethanol use is now more than what the production is. So that's a positive. I think we could see a bottom in the ethanol production here this week, and moving forward, start to see that number start to increase a little bit.
Man, that is a relief. I mean, that would just take pressure off of what we're dealing with, and that would be a really good sign. What's happening in the soybean market?
Well, a little bit of price strength there. We did have a couple cargoes of daily soybean sales go to Mexico this morning, old crop and new crop. So that, I think, given us a little bit of price support. But with wheat and corn under pressure, the meal market weaker, soybeans have to really fight on their own this morning. Right. And we'll see if that holds up or not.
All right. Good stuff, man. We've got mixed trade going in live cattle, a little firmer trade going in feeder cattle. And only the May contract in hogs is working to the upside this morning. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Chip.
Yes.
Whenever they play this, I always think, I ordered spaghetti marinara, and what I got was egg noodles and ketchup. That's all the money we have, Karen! Karen!
Oh, man, welcome back.
Every time he plays that bump, I just can't keep it in.
And it came spilling out.
It really did. I'm sorry about that.
All right. The America's Conservation Ag Movement is an effort of Trust in Food, which is a Farm Journal initiative, Farm Journal Foundation, USDA's Natural Resource Conservation Service, American Farmland Trust, and others. And they are the sponsor of the Farmer Forum. We're going to get it started right now. Tim Recker, Northeast Iowa. How you doing this morning, Tim?
Doing great, Chip. It's a great cold day in Northeast Iowa, but corn is all on the ground, and that's a good feeling.
Did you wrap things up?
We wrapped up on Saturday, and going between here and the nearest town, it would appear that 80% of the corn is planted in my area. The only thing that's left to plant, it would be the seed corn, which are usually wait till May 1st to get done. And I bet you soybeans are 30% in the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you what, I drove along Highway 3 over the weekend, and the numbers are similar. That's not too far from where Tim is at, and I was really, it left an impression on me how much progress has already been made out there, Tim. And of course, it was reflected in the crop progress report that we got from USDA yesterday with 39% of the Iowa crop planted as of Sunday. I thought, okay, you know what, maybe that makes sense. But after talking to people from across the state, Tim, I don't know, 40% probably doesn't catch where we're at in Iowa.
It's amazing what Mother Nature will allow us to do when we have dry conditions and an incentive to get it done. And that's what most farmers do, have that incentive to get it done early. Because we've seen 2 years where if you lagged a little bit, yep, you were in middle of May before it started.
Exactly. Let's bring in Michelle Jones from Montana. Michelle, welcome back to the Farmer Forum. How you doing this morning?
Well, I'm good, Chip. We're kind of in between our different seeding days. We wrapped up most of our early seeding last week, and now we're just starting to gear up for spraying season and doing some fencing and waiting to do some more seeding in May.
Yeah, okay. So everything's about on schedule for you up there? Is that what I'm hearing, Michelle?
Yeah, it's pretty close on schedule. I saw the crop progress report that Montana is pretty slow on spring wheat and barley planting, but April has been cold, so I suspect that the rest of the state will be able to make up some ground. There shouldn't be any holdups from either too dry or too wet, but I think people are just waiting for it to warm up a little bit and they can get rolling pretty easily.
Okay, very good. Very good. Let's jump into some of the bigger picture issues here. Tim, how you dealing with this, with everything that is happening around us? What have been the thoughts that have dominated your time when you're sitting in the tractor?
Well, I think we all started out this season thinking disruption in maybe seed, maybe fertilizer, maybe chemicals, that if we didn't have them in-house that we may not get them. And that just wasn't the case. That didn't prove out this year. We had everything, you know, seed was delivered on time for the most part. Any type of ag business that needed application was done. So we had some real apprehension that, this could really be another distribution snafu, much like we had last year with propane. We all know it was propane down in Texas, but we couldn't get it in Iowa.
Right.
And so that's what went through our minds of how this season was going to progress. So we tried to plan as well as we could. And as early as the season turned out to be, things have really went remarkably easy. I hate to say that, Chip, but it was. This was the planting season that was easy just because Mother Nature cooperated. And when we started planting, we didn't stop. It just would continue. And in fact, some guys were hoping for rain just to kind of make some repairs and get some things done that need to be done. And it just didn't happen. It just continued on.
Yep. Michelle, what about you? Has the pandemic and the shutdown, how has it disrupted your process this spring?
You know, it really hasn't, and it almost feels like we live in an alternative world that, you know, our world still is turning, and there hasn't been any, you know, there hasn't really been any delays. We can get what we want. Those, you know, they're all essential businesses. They're all open, and Montana has done really well in keeping our cases, you know, fairly low, which has allowed us to keep, you know, keep going as normal. But, you know, you sit in the tractor and you look at the news and you see everything else that's going on. I talk to my friends that are almost entirely urban based and, you know what they're going through with shutdowns and homeschooling, and, you know, everything for us just feels like business is normal. And it's kind of a weird feeling. It's been definitely really different, but, you know, thankfully we have been able to carry on and keep going and have a pretty good, you know, so far a pretty good spring.
Yeah. No doubt. Tim, it's amazing how, what's the word here? Efficient? It all is the way that one segment of the industry continues to stay up and running, and therefore that need goes on right on down the line. I mean, I'm also thinking, Tim, about, you know, Michelle said that Montana's done a nice job of keeping the COVID-19 infections at a low level. Most of Iowa has, but boy, you get around the packing plants, Tim, and we are looking at hot spots for the COVID-19.
And that is the Achilles heel this year in the distribution system. You know, I look back, and of course, you said it, we have a lot of seat time in that tractor, and you're thinking about all kinds of things. And I'm thinking about, you know, when I was in the hog business, we were fighting diseases all the time. We had TGE, we had all kinds of
PERS.
Diseases, PERS, that took you out of business the whole cycle. But we overcame that with technology, with your care of the animals. We moved them in-house to give them, you know, the proper nutrition and to take all the stresses away, and we dealt through it, and it was at our own dime. And now we're seeing a disruption, especially in the hog industry, that we have no control over, much like the propane last year. You know, I just talked to my hog producer friend of mine, and I said, okay, how serious is it? Because they're talking about opening up the packing plants with the executive order. I said, how long do you have? He says, a week ago, I had 2 weeks. So meaning he's got a week left. Yeah. And I said, who makes that decision? Who will make that decision, whether you euthanize, or it's a little tough to put 5,000 head of hogs that's been in confinement to weigh 300 pounds out in a pasture for a short period of time.
Right.
So they're facing some real tough challenges in the pork industry. And we got to get the plants open, back open. Senator Grassley tweeted out yesterday, you know, as the saying goes, society's 9 meals away from food riots. We don't want that to happen in agriculture. That's not
exactly
what we
right.
want to happen.
That's exactly right. Michelle, what do you make of the executive order? Because I know I've got some mixed feelings about all this.
I definitely have some mixed feelings about it. I mean, obviously they have to run. We're facing... Yeah. You know, euthanizing hundreds of thousands of animals, and that is difficult to explain. I mean, for one, it's difficult for the bottom line. It's also difficult to explain to consumers why that is the case.
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, these are hundreds of thousands or thousands of employees that, you know, they have to feel safe going back to work. And I do hope that, one, that, you know, the CDC, OSHA, USDA, whoever needs to, provides the PPE necessary, but also that the senior management of those JBS, Tyson, Cargill, you know, that they are in those packing plants with those employees, because you have to be able to, it's just like we said with, you know, Congress isn't going back in session, so why would the rest of the world go back to work?
Right.
Well, if your senior leadership is not in those packing plants, why would your rank and file workers go back to work if you yourself as a senior manager are not comfortable being in that plant? And so I hope that, you know, Tyson, that those companies take that seriously and that we can protect those workers, because it's disconcerting just thinking about sending them back in, you know, to be entirely honest.
Yeah, yeah. And Tim, you were talking about some of the biosecurity efforts that we've taken with the hog herd and other. I'm thinking poultry in particular here, but those are things that we can't do and we cannot ask of the people that are processing those animals. You can't ask them to isolate away from their families.
Well, but maybe, Chip, what we've done in the ag industry, in the pork industry specifically, shower in, shower out.
Hey, you know, let's talk about that more when we come back, because I got to get to a break, Tim. We'll be back with more of the Farmer Forum in a moment.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
Hey, just a reminder also that America's Conservation Ag Movement is the sponsor of Farmer Forum here on AgriTalk. To learn more about the movement and those partnering for along with ACAM, go to www.agweb.com/ACAM. All right. Farmer Forum, Tim Recker from Northeast Iowa, Michelle Jones in Montana. Tim, at the end of the last segment, I wasn't paying enough attention to the time there. Sorry. But the biosecurity that we use, it's hard to use that same type of security for the workers, isn't it?
Well, I'm just bringing out the point that we've adopted biosecurity in animal husbandry for a long time. It's shower in, shower out. It's all in, all out type of segregation. We segregate the sick, not the healthy. We segregate the sick. And really, at the end of the day, only the healthiest animals make it to slaughter. The rest don't. Yeah, I'm just making those comments just because I look at things that we've already overcome over years of really pandemics in our own industry, and we've figured it out that we can get healthy animals to the end if we have a processor that can do it.
Interesting. Good stuff. Good stuff. Okay. Mentally sharp. Michelle, how are you doing it? How are you staying mentally sharp in the middle of all this? We talked about farming on and the farm on effort that we are promoting here at Farm Journal. You started it off so strong for us, Michelle, with a blog that you wrote. It's been a couple of weeks ago already because we had you read that blog on AgriTalk on Good Friday. But a lot of the emotion that goes on with farming on is starting to come out, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. And a lot of, in every part of the industry, it's hard not to be, impacted by a lot of emotions, a lot of conflicting emotions. And, there's a lot of, obviously a lot of analysis, everyone has their own opinions about the shutdowns and things like that. There's a lot of stress, be it economic or health stress. It's definitely a lot, to deal with this year for everyone. And, I find myself looking for good news, just give me something. I really like Jim's podcast interview with Greg Dowd last week, I think it was, because there was some good news, finally, something. I mean, it's not all good news coming out of China in terms of phase one, but at least there was something. And I think that we definitely need that, just small pieces of good news to keep us going and, try and maintain a healthy mental balance.
Yeah, absolutely. Recker, what are you doing to stay mentally sharp?
I talk to the grandkids on Facebook, make contact with the parents. That's probably been the hardest thing is, not being able to communicate that way. My wife and I are doing a house remodeling project, and nothing will ground you quicker than having to make decisions on a house remodeling project. So a lot of other problems can look very small when you're looking at a house remodel.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it. As you think ahead for the next couple of months, Michelle, what's on your mind about how farming might change going forward?
I'd be, curious to watch the, how these packing plants recover, and also the move to smaller processing, more of that localized processing. It's become a big part of the conversation, and I think it is important. But I've also looked at some of the prices that some of the local beef offers, and it's high. It's more than the grocery store. So, I'll be interested to see how that plays out and how those models, if we can, get more local supply. And, for the long term in farming, I don't know, how this will change. I think there's certainly still more questions than answers, and a lot of unknowns still.
Yeah, certainly. Tim, when you think about the next couple of months, you know, there's been some comments on Twitter during the show here about, you know, hearing about guys in Iowa being done planting corn, haven't turned a wheel yet out in Ohio. But, I mean, when we see this kind of an April, Tim, a lot of times we pay for it later.
That's right. Mother Nature humbles us in so many ways. And so, you know, we don't want to blow our horn, you know, too loudly yet. But, you know, the things that, you know, probably make me stay up at night is thinking about what's going on in this pandemic is how much demand destruction are we going to have in ethanol? How soon can our ethanol plants get back on track? What's the long-term range for corn? What about our livestock industry? How fast can they get back in and supply the food chain? Those are the things that probably are more concerning to me right now, short term. I'm hoping that we as resilient Americans can come right back and we can open the doors, you know, be open for business, and we can start where we left off before the pandemic. That's what I'm hoping. But I know that there's been too many things that have changed, and it's going to change forever. Things that you can't take back. The genie's out of the bottle.
Yep. Good stuff, Tim. You know, and Michelle, it's not just the U.S. situation. It's a global situation that we're dealing with, and that's had a big impact on we need to maintain those relationships and build those relationships with our with our trade partners, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We have to keep up, you know, our relationships. We have to keep working on implementing China Phase 1, and there's just so much we have to do this on a global level, and we can't lose sight of that we still are, you know, our global customers are a huge deal and very important to us.
Absolutely. I can't believe the music's playing already. I could talk to you guys all day. Thank you so much, you guys, for making time for us this morning. It's good to get caught up with you both. Tim, take care. We'll see you soon.
You bet. Thanks, Chip.
That's Tim Recker, Northeast Iowa. Michelle, thank you so much. All right, that's Michelle Jones out in Montana. Hey, come back this afternoon. We're going to have a conversation with Arlen Suderman from INTL FC Stone. And tomorrow morning, get this, we've got NASCAR's Dr. Andy Randolph, Climate Corp's John Raines, and dairy farmer Dwayne Faber.